From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection for this hour was made in June when the Rochester Police Accountability Board announced that it had chosen a new executive director. Here's how my colleague Gino Finelli reported at the time. Quote, the Rochester Police Accountability Board has tapped former Rochester City Schools Superintendent Leslie Myers Small as its next executive director. The decision comes after a nearly two-year nationwide search that cost the city $40,000. Myers Small served as the superintendent of the Rochester City School District from 2020 to 2022, and before that led Brockport Schools for 7 years. She resigned from RCSD under fire from school board members for alleged poor management. The push to oust Myers Small followed a school budget process described at the time by state fiscal monitor Shelley Jallow as completely irresponsible. The Police Accountability Board is a police oversight agency created in 2019 after a referendum overwhelmingly approved by voters. It is tasked with reviewing cases of alleged misconduct, making recommendations for discipline to the Rochester Chief of Police, and performing oversight analyses of departmental policy. End quote. And Gino quoted the chairman of the Police Accountability Board, Larry Knox, who said the following, quote, Dr. Myers Small is passionate about her work and commitment to the Rochester community and is eager to continue making a positive impact in her new role with the Police Accountability Board, end quote. For some observers, this came as a surprise. A longtime school superintendent moving into the world of police accountability. And this hour, we get our first chance to sit down with Leslie Myers Small in this new role to discuss the job, to discuss the role of the PAB in Rochester, and what comes next. And my guests include Dr. Leslie Myers Small, Executive Director of the Police Accountability Board of Rochester. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evans. Good to be back.
Also with us is Ben Whitwer, who is Deputy Executive Director of the Rochester Police Accountability Board. Welcome back to you.
Thank you.
And with us in studio, Gino Finelli, Investigations and City Hall Reporter for WXXI News. Thank you for being with me as always, Gino.
Happy to be here.
So we have City Council approval. Everything is moving forward here. I said it came as a surprise to some observers. Gino, that's only because I'm not as plugged in as you. Were you surprised in June?
A little bit. We had been waiting for a while to find out who was going to be tapped. And this was a nationwide search. And not specifically that it was Leslie herself that was picked, but that it was a local person that was picked.
Right, because it was a nationwide search.
It was a nationwide search. It had gone on for quite a while. And after the kind of forced resignation of the inaugural executive director, Connor Dwyer Reynolds, this had been a search that had been going on and on and on and on. And and then to see someone who is local, well-known in local, administrative circles, that was a little bit surprising to me. I kind of expected that there would be a more new person pick that they would be bringing in. But yeah, that was kind of my takeaway on it.
Well, Leslie, were you surprised? Are you surprised?
I don't think it's a far departure from what I did. I know people know me in the realm as an educator over 30 years, as an administrator, superintendent, and former assistant commissioner. But the skills, I believe, wholeheartedly are transferable, right? When you think about leading the Police Accountability Board, there's a lot of certainly there's the investigations, there's the legal piece. I've managed legal departments as superintendent, very familiar with law, and I'm a quick study. But there's also the administrative piece that I think people don't often think about leading the agency. There are systems and structures that need to be in place, organizing the agency, right? The human resources, the budget piece, building relationships, and really doing some branding so that we can move forward in a purposeful way. So, I think it's a natural progression for me. As it was mentioned, I've been committed to this community. I've lived in this community since 1977. So I'm glad that you gave me this opportunity because even though it was a national search, I think it makes sense to have somebody who knows the politics, the local happenings, right? It didn't take me a long time to have to get up to speed with city council, with the mayor, with the police chief, et cetera. So while I think it's great that they search far and wide, I think certainly my connections and the roles that I've served in previously well positioned me for this role.
I'm curious to know if you reached out to them or did they reach out to you to consider the job?
So it's interesting. I reached out, right? And it was through the interview or through the application process, and had a great conversation with the search consultant, and then I moved through the process like everyone else did.
When did it first occur to you that that you might get this job?
Well, you know, I don't go in arrogant, but I go in confident, right? If you don't go in confident, then in my opinion, you don't have, you shouldn't apply, right? If you don't think that the end outcome is that you're going to be successful. But I just want to anchor into the fact that this work really is very personal for me. Just growing up in the home that I grew up in with the what my parents stood for, social justice. And I think I would be remiss if I didn't share. You know, I have a son in Matteson, Illinois, who just started his senior year. He's African-American, right? I have an African-American husband. And that we know that there are sometimes interactions that have come out that have been unfavorable, right? And Daniel Prude. And so this work means a lot to me, to make sure that I work at least in the Rochester community to make sure that interactions are appropriate and that, you know, that there is a positive outcome when someone interacts with the police.
And, you know, I didn't actually give the full scope of your resume at the outset. I only mentioned two superintendent's jobs. But to be fair, it is a multi-decade career that you've mm-hmm. had, mostly in education, an educator, administrator, superintendent of Brockport for like 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
You are the state job, the commissioner job. Can you briefly describe that?
I was an assistant commissioner for innovation and reform.
Okay, and mm-hmm. then you come to RCSD, and you know, all of what I learned about you was that everywhere you had been, it had been a positive relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's never easy to move on, but my understanding of your work was that it was very well regarded everywhere you went. Your departure at RCSD, at least to observers, and this is where
sure.
I want to give you some space to talk mm-hmm. about this, is the only time that I'm aware of in your career where it doesn't look like it was all either all that amicable or positive.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if the way you would characterize it is if you were forced to resign, if you resigned because you felt like things weren't working. You know, there were some board members, not all, who said that, you know, they didn't like the way things were managed. I mean, do you want to talk mm-hmm. a little bit about that? Because that was a pretty high-profile situation.
It was high-profile, and, you know, lots of lessons learned from that situation. And as you said, I was a highly decorated educator. Rochester is a very complex, multifaceted onion, peel back the layers of the onion organization, right? And I think we have to remember that I took the helm in the midst of COVID. I didn't meet all my board members in person until, 9 months after I started, right? So we were in an environment of COVID. And I believe I had a really good start. Great. First year, it was difficult, right? Trying to make sure and to, you know, remember the superintendent before me departed very quickly. Didn't even really stay a year. So I was working on healing relationships.
Was that Terry Dade right before you?
Terry Dade yeah. right before
yeah,
me.
Yeah, that was
right.
Yeah.
And I had a hurting staff, right? Like our superintendent left us. So I had to do a lot of rebuilding. And, you know, there are times, and it's not uncommon for superintendents and boards to not get along. And that started to happen. But I think the difference maker is the public nature, right, of the way that, unfortunately, historically, the Rochester Board of Education operates, right, as far as putting information out, leaking things from executive session. You know, and certainly some things were very opinionated, some were fact, but there are times when superintendents and boards of education don't get along. And in my opinion, even though, you know, things that I had been accused of, it was unfounded. And I thought after having a conversation with the board, it was in the best interest for us to part ways. And again, I think, you know, what was difficult is that, you know, we agreed to work it out and it got leaked either that night or the next day. And that was frustrating and it was hurtful and very hurtful things were said. But if you go and roll the quote unquote footage back, I maintained integrity the whole time and I didn't bash. I didn't say anything, you know, out of character. And I continue to say that even though I'm no longer working in the Rochester City School District, I continue to support the students, the staff, and to move forward. And that's how I operate.
So Let me ask about the new role then, and maybe why I think this set of questions matters, and I'll let Gino jump in too if there's anything that stands out to him. Part of why I think this matters is Gino, among others, have reported extensively on 5 years, and maybe not a full 5 years now, but the first several years of the PAB had a lot of dysfunction. There wasn't a whole lot of work in terms of the investigations happening, and there were all kinds of ugly allegations between the former executive director and some other members of the PAB. And so, you know, you're coming out of this high-profile role where there was a breakdown in your relationship with the board at the RCSD, and I think people are looking at this saying, we cannot afford that with PAB, right? It has to – somehow it has to be positive. There can't be a breakdown here. Does should that concern anybody?
No. You know, again, I'm fine to talk about what happened in the past, but I think we focus on the past so much. I get that that's important, but – our focus is forward, right? And making sure that we move forward. I know, and I did my research to hear about the fact that there were challenges, particularly personnel challenges, relationship, trust challenges. And so again, the background that I bring, not only administratively, I have a master's in counseling and a bachelor's in psychology, right? So it's about people for me. And so I think coming in and just working to build relationships. The day after it was announced, I came in and I sat with the staff and I said, I'm looking forward to working with you and connecting, and we're gonna move forward purposefully. And shortly after I started, Evan and Gino, I did held an all-staff meeting, and we did a focused activity on what's your why. And it was really powerful to hear the responses. I'm here because I want to serve my community. I'm here because I want to make sure that people who are underserved or undervalued, not seen and not heard, have a voice. And we collected all that information. And again, you know, that's something that I unequivocally can get behind and work with. And it's powerful. So while I might have had some bumps, and again, you mentioned it, Evan, I had a successful career, right? So I think people get hung up on the fact that I had a challenging last year in the Rochester City School District, but it doesn't take away from the fact that I had 29 very successful years, right? But because it was so public, it's a high profile job. And again, unfortunately, you know, people leak things. It you know, unfortunately dissolved.
Okay. Ben, you want to jump in here too?
I do, Evan, because I you know, I interviewed Dr. Meyer Small when she was one of the finalists for the position, and I can shed some light on the selection process. The first thing I just want to say is that no candidates were tapped by the PAB. The selection process was run by an outside entity. It was purely merit-based. There was no sort of like relationship aspect to the selection process. We just wanted the most qualified candidate. But for me, when I sat down with Dr. Meyer Small for the first time in the interview process, what stood out to me is she has had to steer ships through kind of troubled waters before. And I think that that's actually a really important thing for the leader of our organization. You know, we need someone who's kind of been there, done that, who has been in a highly scrutinized role before, and who has, you know, had to defend their convictions and what they believe in and what they believe in for their organizations, you know, knowing that it might be controversial, knowing there might be public scrutiny. And it doesn't really get any more high profile than, you know, school superintendent during COVID to me. So we're really excited to have someone who can come into an organization that did have challenges with the rollout and who understands how to right the ship. And I'm, you know, she's only been here for a month and a half, and she's already been doing that.
Okay. Anything you want to add there, Gino Finelli?
Yeah, you know, for me, I think it's really, really critical to understand like the history that the PAB was formed out of. I mean, this was a long pursuit of advocates for a very, very long time. And it fundamentally replaced the Civilian Review Board, which was formed in the 90s, which was a volunteer board that offered advisory opinions on police discipline findings. And basically, the department could receive those and do whatever they wanted to with them. There was no power to do anything. And I think the thesis of what the PAB was supposed to be was something that had this independent authority to be able to compel discipline, to be able to advise policy. And obviously, the court struck down the ability under the public employee law to compel the compel discipline. The PAB does continue to do a lot of the so-called oversight investigations, which are basically looking into policies of the department and making recommendations on it. Where I'm going with all of this is the point of where we are right now and what phase of the PAB we're in right now. And there is still from you have conversations with people that are involved in this. There is still some hope that is held. And Ben, I would actually like to hear your opinion on this, that disciplinary power could have attacked to go forward. But right now, it's in this position where it is an advisory body and it can offer opinions to the department on policy, on discipline of certain officers. And what it really comes down to is how compliant or how accepting the department is to taking those recommendations with any stock. If the chief wants to take those and say, hey, look, we have this case that we looked into with this cop and PAB made this recommendation that maybe we overlooked something and we want to revisit it, they can do that. At the same time, they can look at the whatever recommendation is given and ball it up and throw it in the trash. And there's nothing stopping from them from doing it either. So to me, the thing that I keep returning to in all the reporting that I've done on this is the only path forward for the PAB to function is to have this good faith relationship with the other key stakeholders at play, which is the department, the city council, the mayor's office, the district attorney's office. And if those relationships are made, maybe there is a path forward. But right now, I think it's a very complicated web that kind of exists that it's really hard to determine what it's going to look like going forward and what powers are actually going to be there. And inevitably, it all falls down to who's in charge. And
so let me take Gino's good, I think, backgrounder and take it point by point. First of all, he brings up the question, Ben, this is really for both of you. Do you consider it now a done deal that the courts have spoken and that disciplinary power is not going to be part of what you do?
Well, no, because it can be legislatively granted to us. And in the court decision where I think it's important, you know, as soon as the PAB law passed, it immediately met a legal challenge from the police union. And they tried to just defeat the entirety of it. They tried to just end the PAB. And that wasn't successful. The courts upheld all aspects of the PAB except for the disciplinary power over officers. And that relates to essentially collective bargaining rights that officers have under something called the Taylor Law, where they essentially collectively bargain to have their discipline rest with the chief of police. The legislature can grant city council the authority to vest that authority elsewhere.
The state legislature.
That's correct.
Would have to give Rochester City Council or an individual municipality the option to do that.
That's correct, Evan. Well, so
it's a big hill to climb, isn't it?
It may well be, but just to answer your question about is it a done deal, it's not a done deal if legislative action is taken. And I know that there are efforts to do that, to give the voters what they actually overwhelmingly approved. But in terms of how to move forward or how we are moving forward without disciplinary authority, you know, we're not just putting together advisory opinions for the chief of police. We're bringing accountability and transparency to the public. When members of the public, you know, bring an issue of police misconduct to us and ask us to investigate, and we complete that investigation, we inform that member of our findings. At the end of the summer, we're going to be posting all of our completed investigations on our website so the public has an opportunity to look at our investigative process and see what findings we came up with. Can we compel the chief to act on those findings as it currently stands? No, we cannot. But I think that there's a middle ground in terms of accountability where you make a recommendation, you make the public aware of the recommendation, and you create greater investment in the decisions that the police department makes. And so I think what the voters were really looking for with the PAB was some form of public accountability for the police department. And I think that we kind of build that bridge.
Those reports are going to be redacted, correct?
They will be redacted in some form. Without getting into all of it, as you guys may know, it used to be the law of the land that police records were not to be publicized, that they had a sort of protection. That law was repealed in 2020 in New York State. And so there's still litigation around the extent of what can and cannot be disclosed about a police disciplinary record. So the reports may be redacted in some form, yes, but they will give the sum and substance of what the allegations were, what the PAB finding was, and what the disciplinary recommendation was. And we also, you know, get follow-up from the police department to know what, if anything, they actually did about an allegation of misconduct that the PAB may have sustained. And so we have the opportunity to evaluate their responses and potentially make the public aware of those responses.
Let me ask the executive director that if you want to weigh in as well. I mean, when you're applying for this position before you're selected, you're aware of this public debate about discipline. You're aware that so far the courts have not upheld the authority of the PAB to discipline. How important is disciplinary power to what you want to accomplish?
I think it's important, but again, it's not an end-all be-all. And just to piggyback a little bit on what Ben said, the fact that we are able to independently investigate alleged police misconduct, I think, is powerful. And the fact that we can publish those outcomes is unprecedented. There's no other, you know, lawyers, doctors, educators, if there's misconduct, unless it somehow, you know, makes the media, it's not published. In this instance, we are the independent authority to be able to do that. And again, going back to just to our beginnings, right? We were created because the community said so, and it was cemented by a public vote. The fact that the community has asked, and you'll hear us reiterate multiple times, transparency and accountability, transparency and accountability. You'll hear that over and over again. We are fulfilling that aspect of making the public aware of what has been alleged, that you had a group of experts who reviewed the information, conducted additional interviews, potentially reviewed body cam, and made a decision of one or more infractions.
Okay. Now, Gino is also bringing up the relationships that may develop, may fray. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to know how you view the importance of relationships. And maybe I'll put it out this way, but I want both of you to kind of weigh in on how this develops. It is true that I guess the way Gino put it, if they want to just ball up your recommendations, throw them the garbage, they can. I don't know if that would help the relationship. But I also don't know how the relationship is right now. I don't know if you call the chief. Do you have a conversation? If they're investigating on their own and PAB is investigating an incident, are they aware of it? Do they call you and say, what do you got? I mean, how is the relationship, and does it need to be cordial, positive? Is there always going to be some adversarial nature to it, Leslie?
So it certainly needs to have the following elements. The relationship needs to have open communication, right? The relationship has to have some trust, and I know that that is certainly a big piece that we deal with, certainly from RPD. The relationship has to have clarity and understanding, and so I have met with some of the executive leadership in the Rochester Police Department, and I do have a meeting on tap that is on the horizon with Chief Smith to really just establish and to hear from him what are the concerns that he specifically has, because I've heard it from multiple, you know, second or third hand sources, but I need to hear directly from him. So the relationship really is critical. You know, we need to have a relationship and communicate certainly with the Locust Club. That's a critical relationship. We certainly are a subcomponent of City Council, and I feel through the confirmation hearing and other meetings that I've had, certainly with the president and other at them as a group, that they are fully supportive of the Police Accountability Board and us moving forward. So that relationship is important. We have reached out to District Attorney Dorley about her letter, and we are waiting to hear a response. That letter went out about a week ago. So we're hopeful that we'll be able to have a meeting with her and have some conversations, because we feel that letter is pretty powerful. But again, you know, I'm not going to keep on saying I'm new or I'm just starting, but there are so many things that I'm working on. But this is a critical piece of making sure that the appropriate stakeholders, police, Locust Club, City Council, the mayor, the district attorney, that we forge those relationships and that we can communicate regularly and hopefully come to some understanding that can remove some of the challenges or barriers that we've identified.
Yeah, and I'll tell you kind of the impact that I've seen relationships have. I mean, it's easy to just point to the statute and say the law is the law, the PAB has the power that it has, and even notwithstanding the Court of Appeals decision, the PAB still has quite a lot of statutory power. But it's a new organization that opened its doors in 2022. Evan, you got into some of the hiccups that happened initially that slowed the rollout. Gino kind of talked about where we were before the PAB. This is a sea change. This is like a new paradigm for public safety in Rochester, and it takes a while for folks to get used to that. There are civilian review boards across the country that have existed for a lot longer than the PAB, and for lack of a better term, stakeholders have gotten used to them and have kind of like figured out what they think about them and how to deal around them, and that's where the relationships come into play. You know, some of what we struggle with the police department is that they have access to materials that came from third parties, other law enforcement agencies or stakeholders, and those parties aren't necessarily comfortable with them giving them to the PAB. So we kind of negotiate around that. And so the reason relationships are important is they affect the way the sort of actors that we need to interact with perceive us and how cooperative they are with us. And I think as time goes on and as the agency gains momentum, those relationships grow. So I think people just need to get used to the PAB. I don't think it's going anywhere. And I think people need to kind of like learn what we're all about and how to better respond to us. And that's why we're meeting with city council, you know, on a monthly basis. And we're sitting down with, you know, city law and RPD and all the stakeholders is to kind of build that. It's not just about trust. It's about like understanding. It's that clarity piece. And so relationships end up being really crucial just so that everything functions smoothly and efficiently.
Have you, Leslie, have you met the chief in person yet?
I have. He actually approached me and congratulated me at my hearing.
Okay. But so the meeting coming up will allow you to air out more of this, as you say, understand each other better. Mm-hmm. Is it your impression that he does not trust PAB or that there's a negative relationship right now?
I don't really have a good sense of that. I know that, again, with the challenges that have been outlined, I mean, he's the final say on those things. So we haven't received some of those things. So I don't know if it's trust. I can't put a describing word to it, but that's why the meeting is so important, to get an understanding. Because I could suppose certain things, lots of things.
Let me read one email, and then I want to explore something else that Gino brought up here. Alex writes to say, from an outside perspective, it doesn't seem like there's a great working relationship between RPD and the Accountability Board, and the Locust Club specifically has successfully lobbied for increasingly more restrictive interpretations of the PAB ballot measure, to the extent that PAB is almost completely reliant on RPD to share any documentation related to cases and investigations. Are there any local legislative avenues to correct this, or would it have to be something passed by the state legislature? That's from Alex. Do both of you agree? Has the Locust Club tried to restrict the information that you all get?
I don't want to say definitively, because it's not like I'm privy to, you know, whatever the Locust Club is doing in the background. They are the police union, and so they have an interest in protecting their membership's interest at all times. And so I don't think there's any jurisdiction in the country where the police union does not have some pushback against, you know, accountability measures for police officers. I think that's just the nature of the back and forth. But, you know, to the larger point, the authority is there. It's in the legislature that already exists, the legislation rather, that already exists. You know, I don't think that there's any action that needs to be taken to say that we have access to RPD materials. We do, and they provide them to us most of the time. The hangups happen over disagreements, like I outlined before, where there are just complications and different stakeholders involved, and they can be a bit shy about it. But I think a lot of times what I found is that some of the hesitation just comes from confusion that can be just clarified by sitting down, explaining things, and working things out. And so, you know, the relationship is there, the process is there, the law is there. It's just about getting it to be applied consistently in every circumstance. And I do think we're getting there. And I don't think I think we should expect that the police union will try to protect their membership. And that's okay, and we can work around that.
You're hearing Ben Whitwer, Deputy Executive Director of the Rochester Police Accountability Board, and the Executive Director of the PAB is Leslie Meyer Small, the new Executive Director, who is in that role after decades of work in the education field in our community. Gino Finelli is with us in studio, Investigations and City Hall reporter. You know, you were asking, Gino, if the reports that we're going to see published, if they're going to have redactions. Mm-hmm. But in general, what I don't know, and maybe you can add some light on this, and Ben and Leslie can as well, is, you know, a year ago we sat here and we talked to members of the PAB. I think it was before Ben, before Leslie got here. But we talked about, you know, what we would see in terms of possible recommendations. And at the time, there wasn't a case where there had been a recommendation for actual discipline to really be kind of the litmus test to see if the RPD would say, all right, we're going to go with the recommendation, or thanks, but no thanks. Are you aware of any cases that what have I missed, I guess, is what I'm asking.
I mean, I'm aware of cases that have gone before the PAB.
And they're being investigated, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how the department has actually responded to any determinations that the PAB has made. And I'm very, very interested in, you know, seeing what they do with it. I mean, that's really what this all comes down to.
Yes.
I mean, the oversight investigation, sure, great. I mean, we can understand policy better, you know, but the disciplinary matrix stuff was very interesting. These are all good things. But at the end of the day, the point of the PAB, the real raison d'etre, so to speak, of this organization existing was to influence the department's discipline of officers that weren't being disciplined before for claims of misconduct. And if those determinations are made from an outside body and the department receives them, yeah, I'd be very, very curious of what they actually do with that information. And if they do nothing, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like it's fruitful. And the reason that I keep coming back to like this relationship thing is, yeah, they can if the agencies are not working together in a way that is mutually beneficial for everyone involved, and that they are not on the same page of what the purpose and intent is, and it's adversarial. Of course, the department's not going to comply with it. But I would like to know, I mean, if they decide that they don't want to follow the recommendations of the PAB when there's a determination of misconduct, what then? I mean, what happens then?
So first, I'll answer your question, Gino, which is that we have a dialogue with the police department after they receive our reports. I'm not aware of an instance yet where they have explicitly followed an exact recommendation, but they're just, to be frank with you, RPD is kind of responding in real time to you know, and I realize the PAB has been around for a couple of years, but they're just kind of figuring out internally what to do with our reports. Some they've referred to the professional standards section, which is their internal affairs. Some they've referred to commanding officers of the officers involved. And so I think they're still figuring it out, and these are great concerns to bring to them. But I have to kind of this idea that if we're not controlling officer discipline, what are we doing? I want to push back on, because you described the state of police accountability in Rochester pre-PAB. It was almost nothing. There was as you said, there was CRB, which is a volunteer board that could just review the decisions that PSS made after they were final and had kind of a very limited scope of authority. And so I really don't think we should hand wave at, you know, policy papers that detail the patterns and practices of the RPD for the last 5 years and inform the public about how frequently they're using force on people under the age of 18, how they're responding to protests, you know, how they're disciplining officers internally. We're about to come up with a study on the cost of misconduct, about how much money the city spends settling lawsuits and things of that nature. I think that information is really valuable and probably worth more than like a hand wave. And I also think that while you're right that it was clearly the intention and it was clearly what the public wanted, that there would be civilian accountability that extended to deciding what, if anything, action should be taken about officers who break the rules. But by taking that piece away, you just put the PAB in line with the vast majority of civilian accountability boards in the country, which is, you know, the ability to make evaluations and recommendations and shed light on areas that had been dark, right? Expose information that, you know, was otherwise hidden. I think that these things are really valuable and do speak to the spirit of why the law was enacted. So I appreciate that you believe that disciplinary power is really critical. I don't think the door is completely closed on that question, but I don't think it defeats the mission of the PAB to not be able to control officer discipline.
Well, that's just want to touch back on the oversight investigations, because I'm not hand waving for the fact that I don't think that they're important. I know Will very well, and I think that he does good work, The problem there, too, is, again, a relationship thing. Let's talk about the juvenile force case where they received – the PAB received two of the, what, 338 body-worn camera footage requested. The disciplinary report, which found that they couldn't even make a determination on the policy changes because the department wasn't providing the information necessary to do the oversight investigation to begin with. So you're ending up with reports that might have valuable information with them and it might be making valuable inferences, but they're just that. They're inferences because the department is not providing the information that's critical to doing a thorough investigation to begin with. So that is one of the areas of concern here. I think it is when you're trying to have a fruitful oversight investigation, it's important to have a component that is focused on policy and deeply analyzing it. But if the department is saying that we're requesting all of this and like we're going to give you peanuts compared to what you're asking for, and then you turn over reports that are saying, yeah, we couldn't get what we were asking for, but this is what we think happened. It's a very valiant mission that is hampered by the failure to receive the information that is necessary from the department to begin with. So I don't want to seem like I'm just hand-waving because I don't like the idea of it. I'm more being critical of the sense that it's difficult to do those investigations and it's difficult to have really valid, powerful reports if the department is not providing the information that both the PAB is empowered to request from it and that they really do have, I would say, both a legal under city charter and an ethical obligation to provide. Mm-hmm. If you want to have a conversation, I've talked with the chief about this too, that they want to have a good working relationship with the PAB, that they want to have some good faith exchange of ideas that is happening here. But this is kind of a challenging portion of it that we don't talk about as much. And to Leslie had mentioned earlier the letter from Dorley, and I had written a very extensive piece in May about what Dorley had said. And essentially, she was advising the city's corporation counsel, Patrick Beath, to not provide any information from the department to the PAB for any misconduct investigation that could be related to a criminal investigation, which is extremely broad to begin with, and also goes beyond the point of conviction, which means any appeals that could happen in a case would be still covered to not share that information with the PAB. Now, the Locust Club's negotiated contract has an 18-month period for a misconduct claim to be initiated after the incident. So most of these cases, if there's even someone that was charged with petty theft as a result of, you know, whatever incident they had with RPD and they go to court and then they appeal the finding, it's never going to see the light of day. So I think this is the more challenging aspect than even the court rulings to begin with that strip the disciplinary power is this information sharing and the barriers that are going to be put up. This is the big challenge that the PAB has if they're going to try to move forward and try to have any kind of efficacy. And I think there's good people there doing good work. I'm not saying there isn't, but I am saying that this is a roadblock that very smart people have set up. And it's going to be very, very difficult to circumvent. And I'm very curious of how you plan to do that. Like that's really the big question for me right now.
So we met with City Council at the end of July, and we brought up challenges, including this. We really had a good conversation with them, and I think just shed some more light. And we have another meeting. I was pleasantly surprised that we have another meeting set up at the end of this month. So because we are a subsidiary of City Council, we work through that vein, and we're trying to see if we can garner some support or traction around some of these issues to help resolve them as well. And again, that first meeting, was very productive, I felt, and for us to have another meeting so quickly. So, that's another resource, or, we're working with City Council to see how they might help us to address some of these issues.
Yeah, Gina, that was a pretty good summary of the challenges we're facing. Feel free to come to the next WAR session if you want to give a presentation
to
council. And but seriously, let's just not make the perfect the enemy of the good. That's all I'm saying. We can fight for greater access while still using the access we have to provide the people of Rochester with information about the police department that they have never had before. And I actually think the juvenile use of force study that you cited is a great example of that, because you're right. That could have been better if we had had all of the access to the data that we contemplated, but we were still able to provide a lot of useful information to the public.
Let me also touch on the letter that Gino has reported on. You have the district attorney. She's the district attorney for now. We'll see if this never-ending state investigation into her own possible misconduct leads anywhere. But for now, Sandra Dorley is the district attorney of Monroe County. And Gino is describing a situation where not only can the RPD decide, hey, you want all this body cam video? We're not going to give it to all of you. You have the district attorney urging the police not to give stuff. Right, Gino? I mean, DA is saying, don't give it. So you're going to meet with the police chief. Do you need to meet with the DA as well? I mean, like,
I have a letter into her and waiting to hear back. Yes, asking, just saying we understand that we have this letter. As the new executive director, certainly it's important for me to have a relationship with you. But if there's anything that we can provide clarity or to, provide some additional information, we want to do that. So we're waiting to hear back from her.
And Corporation Counsel's actually been involved in facilitating that meeting. Mm-hmm. So I do think there is a certain amount of information overlap between our agency and the DA's office. And I do think it's one of those things where we just need to figure out a way to meet in the middle. And I think that we can do that.
I do too.
But you know, it's absolutely – look, at the end of the day, the district attorney doesn't control the relationship between the PAB and the police department. It's a relationship that is – enshrined in law. And so, you know, it's the police are deciding based on their relationship with the district attorney to sort of defer to her, but that's not necessarily what the law says they ought to be doing. And so, we're going to assert our prerogative to information access, but we're going to have a lot of an easier time doing that if we can just get on the same page with the other public safety stakeholders in this city and county.
So on the number side, how many total investigations has PAB done? Or maybe if you want to distill it to, here's how many we've done this year. Here's how many we're doing in a month. What do those numbers look like?
We're putting out our yearly report in a couple of months. Unfortunately, I don't have it with me. We've received approximately, I think, 300 complaints in the last year. And so I want to answer your question precisely. I mean, we investigate every complaint we receive. In a lot of those cases, what our investigation yields is that it might not be possible to make a conclusion because of a lack of detail, or there may be, you know, it may be outside of our jurisdiction. But we still investigate every single complaint. We don't turn any of them away. In every instance where information about what's been reported to us exists, we review that information to see if it's within our ambit. We have sent 30 cases to the police department this year that represent completed investigations with findings, either sustained or not sustained, that the board has approved. So that's the number of cases that have gone to RPD where we've made definitive conclusions. And that's that
30 cases.
Yes.
But does that mean 30 recommendations of discipline?
Well, no, it means 30, because not in every case we don't recommend discipline, because in some cases we may find that the officer didn't commit misconduct.
How many times have you recommended discipline?
I do not want to get the figure wrong, but it is close to 20.
Close to 20 total times?
Yes.
How many times out of those roughly 20, and that's not an official number, but roughly 20 cases, how many times has the RPD said, we're going to do this?
Do exactly what we recommended?
Yes.
None. But that's not to say that they haven't taken some type of action around the issue. But I don't think there's been an instance yet of a complete,
sure,
yes, we're doing exactly what
okay.
you recommend.
Well, how many times have they entirely ignored your recommendations?
None. They never ignore them. They will always respond to confirm receipt and describe what their next steps are going to be.
Okay, but that's not – let me put it another way. How many times have they decided to do nothing?
The chief – I understand where you're trying to go with this. I'm not trying to be evasive. I'm just trying to be accurate.
I understand.
Because I don't want to misrepresent, because I don't know where RPD is at with their evaluation of some of our reports.
All right, so you're saying they may actually down the road.
Correct.
Okay.
I can't think of an instance where they have definitively told us, hey, we're not going to do what you said. We don't think they did anything wrong.
And
it's more just that it's still kind of in limbo.
Okay. Without being specific, and again, we're trying to get as much information from – I don't think you're being evasive. I know this is tough, and I know a lot of this is ongoing. Is there a generalized example where you could say, we recommended X, they didn't do X, but they did do Y, or they did indicate they were going to do Y, and that is an indication of
some kind of response. Yes. I think I'm certain that they read our reports because I've had them cite portions of our report. You know, there's a Captain Sweatman, who's the PAB liaison, who I speak to, you know, very regularly, and sometimes he'll ask questions about paragraph 5 or something like that. So they're you know, where I don't think we're at yet, and I can confidently say this, is they're not just going to take a PAB report and say, well, that's that. They're not there with us yet. And that's one of the reasons I'm eager for the public to see our investigatory process, because I think it's impressive and I think it's superior to any other process that currently exists. But I think the police, you know, are used to doing things their way. And so that even when they receive credible information from the PAB, they still want it to be vetted through their established channels, whether it be PSS or high ranking officers, you know, I think that they read them. I think that they respond to them. They just don't necessarily respond in the way that we would suggest. We have a disciplinary matrix, which Gino mentioned, which is sort of is a lot of thought and research went into as far as what is an appropriate way to handle officer discipline. The RPE does not use our disciplinary matrix. They use a very and we actually put out a report about a month ago about, you know, a lot of discipline at RPD is handled by the chief directly without really a formal process. Sometimes the formal process is used. It tends to be very officer friendly. Basically, if the officer says they did the right thing, generally that's what professional standards section goes with. And so I think they're taking what we're saying and they're considering it and they're taking it seriously. They just are filtering it through the way that they tend to handle officer discipline. And remember, that's collectively bargained. They can go to arbitration. There's a lot of steps that are just in the contract between the police officers union, the Locust Club, and RPD that they still have to follow to discipline officers.
All right, a couple other things here, and then I'll read another email. Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to go back. This is draft now of the total number, but the total number of cases from July 1st, 2023 through June 30th, 2024 is 177. And this is and we go month by month, the lowest being 5 and the highest being 27. Those are, we're going to finalize those, but that is pretty accurate.
Okay. What is the most significant level of discipline PAB has recommended so far?
We've recommended termination in 3 cases.
3 cases. And obviously that hasn't happened.
Not yet, but that doesn't mean that it won't, because it's a lengthy process. I'm aware of one case where we recommended termination where I do believe the chief is also looking to do that, but the involved officer has rights under the union to sort of appeal and arbitrate that decision. So it's not to say that they're completely out of step. It's frankly to say that the process of disciplining a police officer is lengthy and involves a lot of different elements.
And how many cases has the PAB investigated?
Upwards of 300.
311.
Yeah.
So fewer than 10% of cases, you end up making any recommendations.
That's correct.
Sounds about 90% plus. You investigate, and what you find is there's no reason to recommend discipline or any other.
Well, we cast a very large net. We're accountable to the community.
Yeah,
and we encourage anyone to report anything. So sometimes it might be someone that just saw something they weren't sure about, right, and they gave kind of scant details. So it's just I don't want you to the reason for that. That sort of low percentage that we can actually get to the finish line is just the nature of our reporting process. It's very broad.
I think it is at the finish line if you're not recommending anything. I think that says you're looking at what the community wants you to look at.
Absolutely.
But if someone is claiming that, well, you're just taking anything and you're trying to railroad officers, 90% or more, you're saying, hey, we looked into it and there's nothing here.
Not at all, Evan. And there's even situations where we are able to thoroughly investigate and conclude that we know what the officer did and that we believe it was completely within policy. And when that happens, we issue a report that says that, and that report is provided to the officer. And so our investigations are not supposed to just be to the detriment of individual officers. They're just neutral, factual, consistent investigations that they can now have to have an independent, learned body determine whether or not what they did was within policy or not within policy.
All right. I want to get this email in quick because this comes up a lot. And I'm wondering at this point of the PAB, 5 years in, if this matters to either of you. Gary is a retired deputy who says, I appreciate the good intentions and with respect, It is unclear how the investigations are thorough and completed by persons with expertise when no one on the board has any law enforcement experience, either in practice or even academically. Being a community activist may make someone a stakeholder, but not an expert. The director mentioned legal and medical investigatory boards, which are staffed by persons in those professions. Would the former superintendent be comfortable with an education accountability board staffed by no one with education experience or even persons related to anyone in the field? So does it matter to you, Leslie, that the PAB doesn't have retired former deputies, officers, et cetera?
I think what's important is the unbiased and fair approach to this. That's one part. The other piece is that we go through our staff, and particularly investigators, the case managers go through extensive training. And Ben, if you would just...
We had two trainings the month of July from active duty law enforcement experts, nationwide experts. Significant trainings, like one was 3 days long, one was 2 days long.
Right. So we go through extensive training about how to approach this in a way that, again, is unbiased, to how to look at the information and to look at the data. And so I think that is the important piece about this, is that they wanted a separate, outside of law enforcement, to look at this. So it's our responsibility to ensure that we are trained. And the charter is very explicit about the types of training that we need to participate in annually to ensure that that expertise is shown and demonstrated through their investigations.
All right. The reports will be published, you said, end of summer. So
yes.
Sometime in the next 4 or 6 weeks, something
Correct.
Like that?
Yes.
Okay. You're going to be looking through those? Is that part of your next
Absolutely.
Big dig, Gina Finelli?
Been waiting 5 years, 6 years to be able to see one of these reports? Yeah, absolutely. I am very, very excited to see what these reports say.
And whose leadership did that happen? The former superintendent, right, who's now the executive
There
director.
You go, yeah.
I just wanted to say something.
Briefly, because you're going to hear the music. Go ahead, Leslie.
Annual report, right? We're going to look at the different demographic aspects. So we're going to look at sex, gender, the zip code of where places occur, so on and so forth. So again, it's going to be illuminating.
Types of complaints.
Right, types of complaints. So I think that's going to be important when that annual report comes up.
Once it's out, I know Gino is going to be reporting on it. And once we have time to digest it, I do hope you'll both come back
Invite
and talk
back.
With us. Please do that. And I want to thank you for making the time to be here. Leslie Meyer-Small is the Executive Director of the Rochester Police Accountability Board. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Ben Whitworth, the Deputy Executive Director. Thank you, Ben.
Yeah, thank you both.
And Gino Finelli, always good, sir.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to give him the microphone more often here. We should do that. More connections coming up in a moment.